I'd like to thank everyone for coming in today to the webinar on legal questions in regard to delivery and takeout with restaurants in the light of government mandates in regard to getting food out to our consumers. There's so much going on, and we just thought as much legal information we can get out to you, the better, so that you can feel confident when you are initiating this operation. So with that said, thank you for your engagement with Michigan Restaurant Lodging Association, and I will turn it over to our speakers so they can introduce ourselves and get going on some content. At the end, there will be a chat box where you can submit questions for Q&A, and we'll make sure that we get to as many of those as possible today. Go ahead, Mark, and Helen, we'll kick it off to you.
Thank you, Amanda. So my name's Mark Berzik, and with me is Lizzie Mills. We are more than 6 feet apart, just so that you know. I'm a board member of the MRLA and have been for quite some time. I practice law in the hospitality industry and have for about 30 years. Lizzie leads our firm's labor and employment practice, and she's been representing, in this context, private sector employees in particular in the hospitality industry for a decade. So the MRLA asked us to put this webinar together. So I think it's scheduled for an hour, but we will not have that much material. We're gonna give you some things for you all to be thinking about if you want to implement a delivery service for your restaurant. Let's put all of this in context. The governor's executive order from yesterday states places of public accommodation subject to this section are encouraged to offer food and beverage using delivery service, window service, walk-up service, drive-through service, or drive-up service, drive-through service or drive-up service, and to use precautions in doing so to mitigate the potential of the transmission of COVID-19, including social distancing. In offering food and beverage, a place of public accommodation subject to this section may permit up to 5 members of the public at one time in the place of public accommodation for the purpose of picking up their food or beverage, so long as those individuals are at least 6 feet apart from one another while on premises. This section does not prohibit an employee, contractor, vendor, or supplier of a place of accommodation from entering, exiting, using, or occupying that place of public accommodation in their professional capacity. So all of our comments have that as the backdrop of our of the recommendations. We are assuming, for purposes of this webinar, that you do not currently have a delivery service, either run by your own employees or using any third-party vendors such as DoorDash, Grubhub, or Uber Eats. We'll talk about that at the end. If you would like to implement a delivery service from your own employees, here are some things that you should be thinking about. First, who would you like to be representing your brand in this delivery capacity? You need to make sure that they're good drivers, that they're careful, they're trusted, because they're probably holding money. You may be transacting the exchange of money at the location that you're delivering. They need to be reliable, because your customers don't want cold food. And they need to be safe. And by that, I mean your customers need to feel safe when that person is walking up to the door. So how do you, as a restaurant owner, how do you conduct your due diligence? We recommend, at a minimum, background checks of your drivers that would include credit checks, criminal background checks, and driving record checks. you need to have authorization from the employee to conduct those background checks. And use that information only in the context of the employment capacity. So you'll need a signed authorization from them before you could do the background checks. And then once you get the background checks back, then you need to do an analysis of that credit history, criminal record, and driving record to determine whether or not those results represent your brand out in the field. For example, what level of debt would be appropriate? Are they prompt payers or are there a lot of defaults? Those may be important to you in making that decision. When you're looking at a criminal history, is the result a minor in possession while they were in college and a misdemeanor? Or is there a felony assault conviction? When you're looking at the driving record, are they speeding tickets or is it an OUIL or drunk driving?
Here, everyone, it's very important to understand that whenever you're dealing with the results of background, credit, or driving record checks, every decision you make must have a basis in lawful, legitimate business reasons, meaning you must have thought through why it may be inappropriate for someone with a felony assault in the last year to be delivering your food, or why if someone has an OUIL in the last couple of years that may have impacted their ability to drive or maintain a license for a period of that time, why is that important to you or more important to you, for instance, than someone who may have had that same situation 10 years ago? It is critical to understand that this issue of the use of background check information, records of driving and credit related matters are something that have always been a target area for the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And the importance here is to recognize that you cannot have a standard that says, well, if you ever had an OUIL and operating under the influence type of restriction, then you can never work for us or you can never drive for us. Because if that OUIL was, let's say, 15 years ago, the EEOC will very quickly tell you that that has no bearing on that individual's present ability to perform your job as needed, unless you see other markers of repetition of that same or similar type of problem. So I would like to caution all of you to take great care in handling these background check results and understanding that there are limitations, and it will be important for you to be able to demonstrate why you made a particular decision. I say that all sort of tongue in cheek, understanding that all of us are moving at the speed of light right now to address the ever-changing, shifting landscape right now. But it doesn't mean that we can foreclose those standard best practices that would keep you safe in the long haul. Because the last thing we would like is for you to be subject to some kind of subsequent claim for inappropriate use of background check information or inappropriate blanket bans against certain types of individuals or certain individuals with particular arrest or conviction records, which can have much farther reaching implications than even this COVID-19 pandemic.
Okay, so background checks are the first thing you need to do in selecting drivers. Second, you need to make sure that your driver has the appropriate insurance to be a legal driver in the state of Michigan. And you must require proof of insurance from that employee, especially if they are using the their own vehicle. If they're using their own vehicle, is that the type of vehicle you would like to have represent your brand? How are you going to mark those vehicles so that your customers know it's the food delivery showing up to the to their door. It might be acceptable to simply have a magnet, you know, a magnet sign on the door, but signage is probably important for you at this time to make sure that the customer knows what's coming. And then finally, you need to contact your own insurance company or insurance agent to ensure that you have the proper coverage to have these delivery, that this new service to your business, that is a delivery service added to your business. At a minimum, you will need owned, non-owned, and hired automobile liability insurance. And you need to ensure that that insurance coordinates with all of your other coverages. So calling your insurance agent is critical to make sure that you have the proper insurance coverages. The next topic that we wanted to talk about is can the restaurant deliver beer and wine with the food? And the answer to that is probably, so long as you have a specially designated merchant license, an SDM. The SDM license is a retail license that is that allows for the sale of beer and wine for the consumption off the premises. Many restaurants will have their Class C license to allow for the consumption of beer, wine, and spirits on the premises. Often they will obtain an SDM license concurrently so that they could provide for the sale beer and wine for the consumption off the premises. So you could do that in a takeout fashion. You could also do it in a delivery fashion pursuant to some relatively recent legislation a year or so ago. MCL 436.1203.12 provides that authority. If you hold a specially designated merchant license, you may deliver beer and wine to the home of a consumer so long as it's done by one of your own employees, that you verify that the person accepting delivery is at least 21 years of age, and that the person delivering also has received alcohol server training through an approved server training program by the Liquor Control Commission. We'll talk about DoorDash and the third-party delivery systems at the end. Lizzie has some more issues about using your own employees as delivery people.
So this is an area that is, I would say, very fraught with potential problems, particularly if you are new to the delivery service world. And I say that because for a long time, the Department of Labor and our state equivalent here in Michigan, the Wage and Hour Division, have paid particular attention to delivery-based services. Particularly, we've seen it in pizza delivery, and I expect that that is not going to change. And so what I'd like to point out to you are some of the common areas for what I would call the traps for the unwary, particularly as it relates to how we pay folks or reimburse folks who are providing delivery service for us. The first issue is that it is not uncommon for there to be a claim that there is a failure to pay at least minimum wage because we're not properly reimbursing delivery drivers who are using their own vehicle. This comes up in the context of delivery drivers attempting to claim that they're being inadequately reimbursed for the amount that they're actually expending themselves to make these deliveries, like the cost of wear and tear on their vehicles, gas, tire, car maintenance, insurance, et cetera. And so by making that claim, they try to grab some attention to get some additional funds. It is clear under federal and state regulations that an employer is has an option to reimburse the actual costs that the employee claims to have incurred, or to give a reasonable approximation of funding that would be required to account for that individual's travel for your deliveries. So a couple of notes about this. It is, I know very well, a common practice for companies like yours to decide that they will pay a flat rate to a delivery driver per delivery as a means for reimbursing them. That can work, but that means it has to be very carefully reviewed. Your per delivery rate cannot be stagnant over the course of time. And it's absolutely critical that flat rate, absolutely must exceed the average cost that we're looking to cover for that delivery driver. What we can see is that most of my employers that have delivery service determine that the best way for them to address this issue is simply to reimburse for mileage. And you would do so at the IRS rate. Right now, I think we're at about 58 cents or 57 and a half cents per mile. Obviously, this is not the required mandate for pursuing reimbursement of delivery driver costs, but it is the easiest one to apply. And that's because, of course, that mileage rate is already calculated to address many of those issues I raised as possible costs to the delivery driver. So that is something that is very important. It is also, I think, relevant for you to understand that you can reimburse those delivery drivers for mileage in a combination of things, that you are tracking, for instance, a per delivery rate that you're paying them, but you're truing it up at the end of the week or the payroll to make sure that you did in fact reach at least the equivalent of the IRS rate for mileage. This is true whether the delivery driver elects to take a deduction or not for their business travel in their personal vehicle. So paying that IRS mileage rate is really a saving grace. I have had clients who have had a $2, for instance, delivery rate. So if I deliver three particular spots in one outing, I'm getting $6 for that delivery. But if I had to travel significantly to accomplish those three deliveries, I may have still been underpaid, and that would trigger violation issues and additional compensation requirements. Certainly, it is in this regard very, very careful. You must be very careful to track mileage. And if you don't already have a system for tracking mileage at the beginning and end of someone's shift that they are reporting to you, something that counts the number of deliveries they made, et cetera, this would be the time to get something in place. And the reason I suggest that is if you don't have it now, I can assure you the Wage and Hour Division or the Department of Labor will be all too happy to supply you with one when they're telling you how much they believe you have underpaid employees. You can use Excel for these purposes, and they can be very useful. I think if you even were to Google some mileage logs, you might find some assistance there. And certainly, I'm sure that the Michigan Restaurant and Lodging Association will continue to be a resource for this. Another common issue that arises with the use of delivery drivers in the wage and hour world is that we often forget that delivery drivers are considered tipped employees, and occasionally we will decide that they should be paid at the tipped employee rate because they're likely to receive tips when they're out and about. The trouble with this is if we are going to apply a tip credit for those employees, meaning they're receiving a sub-minimum wage per hour, there are still mandates in place that require us to provide a certain amount of notice to those individuals about that tip credit. So at a minimum, delivery drivers for whom you intend to apply the tip credit must be informed of the following three things. You must tell them how much you will pay them as the employer per hour. You must tell them the difference between that rate and what is the current minimum wage. And you must tell them that they are entitled to the full minimum wage through the combination of what you pay and any tips that they get. And of course, the corollary to that is if the tips plus what you pay do not equal minimum wage, it is our obligation as the employer to make up that difference. As you might expect, this is another situation where reporting and tracking is absolutely critical. I am familiar with some reticence of some delivery drivers in engaging in even tracking of mileage, but if you were to ask them to track their tips, they get even grouchier about it. And I would suggest to you that let them be grouchy, because if you do not have these records to prove that you have satisfied the tip credit notice requirements, the mileage reimbursement, and our minimum wage obligations, you are going to be patently unable to defend a wage and hour situation. So both case law and my experience suggest that your delivery drivers and candidly any other tipped employee must be informed of any tip credit rules, as I've just discussed, and you should do that through a written document that has a signature line on the bottom with a date indicating that they have read it, they've received it, they understand, and are moving forward anyway. If you don't have those notices in place, you are already shooting yourself in the foot and already damaging your ability to rely on that tip credit. Which means if I'm an employee that worked 10 hours at the tip credit rate and I didn't get my notice, you now owe me the difference between minimum wage and whatever tip credit level you chose to pay me for those 10 hours. And you can imagine 10 hours doesn't seem like a lot, but if this is an employee that will go on to work for you for a number of years, that can add up very, very quickly. Relatedly, the wage and hour issue is, again, the failure to make up that difference if there is not enough in the tips to get us to minimum wage. So it is a separate issue than the notice you must give about taking in tip credits, but it's still very important and requires that tracking. You've got to be prepared to account for all of the tips that your delivery driver or any other tipped employee receives. I like to see my employers confirm tips, whether it's electronically, through some kind of a written acknowledgement at the end of a shift. All of those things are helpful to defend you if there's a later claim. And the last couple of items are pretty complicated, but worth noting to you so that you can better understand the scope of this. I'm expecting many of our restaurateurs who are, as I've been saying all week, remaining nimble in the face of all of these changes, that you're going to be looking very carefully at how to utilize your staff to hopefully keep them working as much as you can to provide service to your guests and customers that you would normally see. And in that regard, you might have an employee who is doing deliveries, but maybe in between deliveries, cleaning spaces, working on organization of the kitchen, reorganizing something, maybe rolling more silverware for the day we get to have guests back in our facilities. There is a lot of hairy areas of the law related to tipped employees who are doing more than just tipped work. And so in this, I would simply say, please be sure that anything that they're doing that is a non-tipped duty is happening really close in time with their other tipped duties. And by that, I mean, for instance, don't call your delivery driver in to clean all of the bathrooms from top to bottom for the first 4 hours of his or her shift, and then the latter part of their shift have them doing deliveries. You could certainly have them doing a mixture of responsibilities while they're waiting to take deliveries out, and that will be better than chunking up those types of responsibilities. Again, though, I urge you to talk with your own labor and employment attorney on this issue in particular, because the rules have changed in the last few years about how this can be functionally accomplished within this industry. So just be wary if you have your delivery driver doing more than tipped work like deliveries. And the last thing I'd like to leave you with regard to the wage and hour issues, as if I haven't given you enough quite already, would be that remember, if by some shake of the imagination, you have employees who are somehow working overtime at this point, maybe you limited your number of staff, but you're working them pretty significantly, remember, tipped employees, if they are entitled to overtime compensation, that time and a half rate is based off of the minimum wage, not the tip credit wage. And so for that, I would simply direct you to fact sheet number 15 that the Department of Labor has issued, and of course, any of the related materials. I can tell you from experience that delivery issues for the wage and hour division are like candy, because once they find one, it bleeds into six or seven other problems. And just to drive this home, I would give you some example language from an actual compliance agreement executed with some of our clients. These are common provisions, not narrowly referencing one particular client. But just listen for a moment to how far this goes. The employer agrees that it will comply with all applicable provisions of the Act in the future, and that it will take the following actions to assure compliance at all of its locations and promote compliance with the Act in the food service and delivery industry. First, the employer agrees to reimburse all current and future delivery drivers for all current and future locations who use a personal vehicle for the employer's business at a rate of no less than the IRS standard business mileage rate, unless actual costs and associated records are maintained and paid accordingly. The employer also agrees to provide training to all current and future drivers, ensuring they understand these requirements. The employer agrees to maintain a record of all miles driven by current and future drivers for all current and future locations when the miles are driven in the employee's personal vehicle for business purposes, and those records must be preserved for a period of at least 3 years. The employer further agrees to take steps necessary to ensure that all current and future drivers for all current and future locations are treated as employees and both on time and payroll records. As you might expect, that's the gentle reminder that you don't simply get to have the cash employee that doesn't appear on your payroll as a point of convenience. This compliance agreement further requires the employer to compute overtime on the full minimum wage, not the lower direct tipped wage. We agree that there certainly must be some update to your handbook to make sure that you have that clarity about what the wages are for overtime compensation, even for those delivery drivers. And in this case, the Department of Labor actually required two consecutive semi-annual review of payroll and time records, including mileage, among other things, with the Department of Labor on a go-forward basis. So it is not the situation that they come in once, slap you on the hand, request a check, and leave. They keep coming back to visit to make sure you've done it correctly. So while I recognize that that is a lot to digest, the point, as Mark mentioned at the top of this, is primarily to let you know there are a lot of things to keep in mind as you're building this, and we are urging you not to take the quick and dirty route, because that is likely to be the most expensive version of implementation.
All right, so the last thing we want to talk about is third-party delivery services. Nothing has changed there as a result of the recent happenings. You could be engaging with third-party delivery services today, just as you did a week ago or 2 weeks ago. However, please ensure that the third-party delivery service drivers and you are complying with the governor's executive order. That is, and have no more than five people that are non-workers or non-delivery or delivery people. What I mean by that is your delivery, like your vendors. So no more than five people in the restaurant at one time, and they have to remain 6 feet apart. You also have to be careful that if you want to engage one of these services to be to deliver alcohol for you as well, they would need to be licensed by the Liquor Control Commission as third-party facilitators. So you'll want to make sure that if you want to deliver alcohol, that they that the delivery service has third-party facilitator licenses. So Amanda, we have time to field questions if you have received some.
Absolutely, thank you so much to our attorneys here, Mark Berzik and Helen Mills from Fahey, Schultz, Berzik, and we really appreciate your expertise here. We do have some questions rolling in. The first question is, are managers different than employees when looking at insurance needs?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Are managers different for their insurance needs? I'm not sure if that's in relation to the insurance we discussed about delivery drivers, or if that's healthcare insurance, they're providing healthcare insurance to their employees or to their managers.
Mark, based on when the question came in, I believe it's in regard to drivers, not healthcare.
Oh, so it, for instance, if we decide perhaps we're not going to have some hourly staff that are doing the deliveries, but we're going to engage our managers to do so to make use of their time, is there a distinction in the insurance requirements or recommendations? My answer to that is no. The basis for what we've recommended remains the same, whether it's an exempt employee or not.
So they would need to have their own insurance, their own automobile insurance consistent with state law. And you as the business owner need to have your own insurance coverage for the owned, non-owned, and hired automobile liability. At a minimum, please contact your insurance agent.
Okay, very good. And I encourage anyone, if they have additional questions, to please type them in the chat box below to get those up. I do believe, Mark and Helen, you addressed the second question, which is, are owners required to have different or added insurance for deliveries?
So if you as the owner of the company are using your own vehicle to deliver on behalf of your own company, you have now opened up your entire company to any potential liability that might arise as a result of you doing a delivery. You have also opened up all of your own personal assets for any liability that might arise as a result of something that might happen when you're doing that delivery in excess of your insurance. So again, to me, this is an insurance question and a risk management question. You need to make sure that you have the appropriate insurance coverage on your own vehicles and you have the appropriate insurance coverages for your business. And if it were my business, I would want those to be significantly higher than if it was just a delivery person that I'm engaged with. Because it's my vehicle and my personal insurance that's being implicated here, all of my assets are now available if the insurance doesn't cover the liability that might be caused. Here's an example. You are making a delivery and you crash into a cardiologist family of four who's 40 years old, and you kill the cardiologist. That's a significant liability that you've just taken on. And if it's your car and your business, you've exposed all of your assets to cover that risk. I will tell you that it's different if it's simply a delivery driver, and this is a matter of corporate law. If it's a delivery driver and the delivery driver has the statutory minimum requirements on their insurance policy, and you have the appropriate business coverage, the liability even in the same risk or the same liability of the cardiologist, for example, will never be pierced through to your own assets because of the operation of corporate law. And I'm assuming that your business is in the form of a limited liability company or corporation or some other business entity that will provide you with the liability protection.
Thank you, Mark. That was very good, important clarification. We do have another question that came in. It says, we have a microbrewer license. which allows sales for consumption on and off premise. Clarifying, are we allowed to deliver beer?
If you have a brew pub or microbrewer license, you may deliver beer to the designated, you know, to the home of the designated customer, so long as you do the three things that we articulated for a Class C licensee, that it's your own employee, that you verify that the person accepting the delivery is 21 years or older, and that the person delivering has received the alcohol server training program through a server training program approved by the commission.
Perfect, thank you. That was very helpful to that attendee on the webinar. Oh.
I might just add, Amanda, that whoever asked that question, they should go to MCL 436.1203, subsection 12. 436.1203.12 is the authority for the microbrewer to deliver.
Okay, very good. And if anyone needs clarification on that statute, please let us know at Michigan Restaurant Lodging Association and we can get that to you. Also, this is a good time to let you know that this is being recorded and will be available on mrla.org under the coronavirus information as well later this evening, so you can re-listen or share it with restaurateur friends as well. Another question has come in to you, Mark and Helen. And it says, in regard to the owner, what if an employee is doing the delivering of the food, but it is in the owner's vehicle? And I think what they're asking is the owner's assets at that point opened up and vulnerable because it is the owner's vehicle, but the driver is an employee of the restaurant?
Yes, because the owner is the owner of the vehicle that is used. And I have a very, very sad story of the destruction of a longtime restaurateur's assets because the son was driving the father's vehicle and was in a tragic fatal accident with the son's best friend. And because the vehicle was owned by the father, it exposed all of the father's assets. So similarly, if the owner is allowing a delivery driver to use the owner's vehicle to make deliveries, then you have just exposed all of your personal assets to a tragedy.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. I definitely think that it is something that is very serious and needs to be taken into consideration, barring the worst that happens. Mark and Helen, at this time, there are no further questions, but I wanna let you guys know on this webinar that their firm has been wonderful partners of Michigan Restaurant Lodging Association, and they are a key sponsor and partner of MRLA's Legal Center. So if you are a current member of MRLA, not only do you have access to all of the white papers on mrla.org that addresses a lot of questions in regard to your business day-to-day operations, but you also have access to a 15-minute consult complimentary with the firm, and then if additional services are needed, you can choose to retain an attorney at that point. But just wanted to let you keep that and let you know that that is a member value to those of you who are members. And if you do ever want to be connected, please let us know, and we're happy to connect you with this firm. They are amazing at all things hospitality law. We want to thank you, Mark and Helen, for being on the call today. Thank you, restaurateurs. During this hard time, we're going to continue to provide as much information as possible to you. And again, this will be up, the recording will be up on the website later this evening so you can share it and revisit it as needed.
Hey, Amanda, I want to make one clarification that if the people on the call or any of your members want to pay mileage, the 2020 mileage reimbursement from the IRS is 57.5 cents per mile.
Very good. That is a good question because some people might want to do that in regard to their reimbursement of their deliverers.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you everyone for being on the call, and please let us know if there are any other questions that we can answer for you guys. Take care.
Bye.